Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Coach Randy Blumenthal, and this is the Coach's Corner. And wow, it's great to be back on my shows here, and we're going to try to do this every Sunday. I'm back in South Carolina. I'm excited about that. Good to be back in South Carolina again. And today's show is really something I've been looking forward to for a long time. But before we talk about the show, I want to give a special thanks to J.P. Weber and the Yellow Ball Network for everything that he does to continue this great thing that we've got going here and help get the information out to people. Today's show, I've been thinking for a while, you know, how do we need to get information to the parents about the right coaches at the right time? How do you do that? It's a very confusing process. There's a lot of traps out there today in tennis, but there also is a tremendous amount of opportunity if you do it the right way. So I've been trying to put together over time, well, what is a simple format where we can kind of talk things through, and you have a little list of how to look forward or how to look for certain things or certain traits in coaches at the right level. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I've got a special guest today, Coach Chuck Creasy, who, in my mind, is the best coach I've ever been around. And, you know, we could go on and on about all that he's accomplished in tennis and everything that he's done over the years, but his eyes are tremendous. And this is something that I saw years ago he was very good at. Not only was he good at recognizing where players were at certain times with all the reps that he had in, but also he was very good at seeing where coaches were at and what they were good at that time, and then getting them reps in other areas where they could eventually progress on to a different level of coaching. And that's a very important as we move forward. What happens, unfortunately, is sometimes we box in coaches to where they, you know, feel like they can't progress on any level, and everybody kind of gets frustrated in that process. And then the second thing that happens is sometimes the coach will cling on to a player and the levels have changed two or three times above what they have enough reps to help the player get good at, and they end up kind of holding the player back. And I don't think anyone that's in this game that, you know, really wants to help it out and help the players out want to be in that position, but you don't see yourself. You just feel yourself. So sometimes you just get stuck in that position. We in the U.S. have more than enough talent. We've identified one problem that has happened with our administration, which has slowed our players down. But the biggest problem in my mind is the coaches. We have got to really get structured with our coaching, but it's more than structured. We've got to get inspired by what we're doing. We have to have people around us that can tell us where we're currently at, and we have to put in reps the right way in uncomfortable situations, and that's not currently going on. So there's a lot of pitfalls, a lot of traps out there. And I'm going to go into that here just in a second. But before I do, I want, as I introduce Coach Creasy to you, I wanted him to talk a little bit about, we talked, oh, it was months ago or a year or so ago, about Horse Whisper. It was a documentary that was out there. And then how do you find that type of person in coaching when you get to certain levels? Because, you know, as we go through all of this and we start talking about what you need to look for in coaches, what you'll see is a lot of that is a very similar trait to, and I would recommend that documentary, The Horse Whisperer, but I at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Coach Creasy and let him tell a story a little bit about Horse Whisper, and then come back and we're going to talk about a few things that you should look for with coaches. Coach Creasy?
Yeah, hey, thanks, Coach, for having me on. I appreciate it a lot. And, boy, this is a big topic, a very, very important topic, I should say. You know, the thing is, it's first of all, just talk about coaches. Sadly, most are under-respected. Sometimes they're underappreciated. Sometimes they're over-speculated. In other words, people put too much on them. But it's very confusing. I always wanted to be a coach because, to me, the coaches were the people I respected most in my life. Those were the people I know that made a huge difference in all the sports that I coached or all the sports that I played. But they are the single most important person in the athlete's life and career. And the parents need to understand that. And they need to understand there's not one perfect coach for one perfect kid. If somebody's doing great with a youngster, doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be doing great with your youngster. You have to, as a parent, find the right person. There's no cookie cutter, perfect cookie cutter coach. The kids, here's the deal, though. You've got to coach their hearts. You've got to coach the insides of them as much as the outside. Players are made from the inside out. And you said something very interesting just now. You said that players can't see themselves, they only feel themselves. Well, that's exactly right. No player can see themselves hit a ball, walk, run, what their strokes look like. Now, of course, we have the great advantage of videos now that we didn't used to have and things. They can see afterwards, and you can use video analysis and things. But at the same time, when they're executing, you must still coach players from the inside out. But to talk about the Horse Whisper type coach, actually, I've got a son that plays baseball, and with my son, Coach, actually, you said that baseball with youth is a lot like tennis with youth. Everybody is out there trying to help their kids at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 get the base where they can go out and be a world champion. And, boy, it's something, the amount of baseball people that are out there. Everybody sets up these Butler buildings, and they go into these garages and Butler buildings and things, and they'll coach the kids. And I didn't know, even if I'd been in athletics and coaching myself 46, 47 years, I was very confused by baseball. And you basically told me one time, try to get somebody that coaches the heart, or somebody could try to get that Horse Whisper type person. And the whole purpose of getting the right person is that the kids need to learn from the inside out and develop the hunger of an inquisitive mind. What is the most important quality of a championship athlete? Well, it's the hunger of an inquisitive mind. Now, let me just finish here real quickly here by saying nothing in our society lately has inspired me to think that kids are developing the hunger of an inquisitive mind. They are primarily... Look, computers give us the answers. Cell phones give us the answers. And the kids are basically becoming mosaic thinkers, piecemeal thinkers. They want an answer, they look it up. And the amount of information coming at us, it's great. Look, it's great that we have the cell phones and the information, Coach. But kids can go look up things. And that's nice. However, there's nothing about getting instant information and instant answer that really stimulates their hunger to seek out more things. I really believe that it's a huge, huge trap that kids fall into and parents fall into thinking that there's an answer to how to get your kids better. Each kid is different. There's not a cookie-cutter way to doing it. There's not one pathway. I usually say there is a highway or an expressway with different ways of getting good at the sport of tennis. But the cell phones are basically hijacking the dopamine faucet of the brain, first of all, with the kids, where the kids do not develop an inquisitive mind. They don't have to suffer enough to get the opportunities. They don't have to suffer enough to get the answers. They don't have to suffer through failure enough to give them the necessary motivation to get things. So, yeah, that right person, we've got a 73-year-old guy that's just pretty amazing. He's the right guy for my son. And we go every 2 weeks, parents, once every 2 weeks, and he pours into my son. My son takes it and goes to work on his own. And I'm getting a big buzz out of it as a parent to see my son falling in love with the game of baseball. But we've got to do the same thing in tennis. So that's pretty much what we're trying to do, Coach.
Thank you, Coach. And we talk a lot about this guy that your son goes to. One thing that you all, every week when you tell me some of the things that he does with your son Paul and his baseball, I get excited. I pull out my own notepad. I can't, some of this stuff is wow. I mean, you don't get that kind of coaching.
Can I give you an idea for this last week? Okay, so I have to drive my son an hour and a half. And he's sort of reading this article on the way up there. And I said, what is this? He said, well, Coach Wally wanted me to read this. I said, well, what is it? And I looked at it. It was about the Chinese bamboo tree. I said, well, this doesn't have much to do about baseball, but it does. It has everything to do with baseball or tennis or learning. The Chinese bamboo tree basically is when you get a Chinese bamboo tree and you plant it, you have to water it and fertilize it, nurture it for one, nothing shows. You're 1 year, 2 years, nothing shows. 3 years, nothing shows. 4 years, nothing shows. Then the fifth year, it starts growing, and it grows something like 60 or 70 feet in 8 weeks. And where did all the growth happen? Well, it was all underground, the root system. And then, wow, what just happened? We just had a boy on our team hit the Citadel, have a big breakthrough, and it's taken 3 years. It's one of those, holy cow, what just happened there? And again, the Chinese bamboo tree, but that's tremendous wisdom, and nobody wants to know about, nobody wants to wait and do all the right things through faith and through belief and through nurturing, through caring and through doing and persisting and all those things that you have to do and the many failures you have to do. So parents, the biggest thing is parents need to just be very wise about understanding that this is more like growing the Chinese bamboo tree than it is growing a corn stalk in Indiana or somewhere where it grows in 2 months, bears fruit and falls over.
Absolutely. And that documentary that I was talking about with the Horse Whisperer, there was a movie out with Robert Redford. It's a documentary, and the documentary is called Buck. And it's about Buck Brennerman. And I would recommend that to any parent to watch. And when you watch it, just watch how he handles what he's doing and the mastery of it. Shifting gears, I want to talk a little bit about the traps. And I've got five traps that I want to go through one by one. So get your paper and pencil out. These are some of the areas where you're like, well, hey, where do we get stuck? You don't want to talk about, hey, this person's not the right coach, because coaches are, they shouldn't really be talking about it. You've got to kind of figure it out. They should be talking about each other. You have to figure out what's going on, but where did they get stuck? And then we need to get these coaches in line with learning and teaching the right things. So I want to briefly go through this. Get your paper, pencil out. These are five things. They're not in any particular order. And then I would like Coach Creasy kind of to comment on, his experience with these. The first one is you've got these coaches out there that they explain in great detail one pathway for all players. Now, Coach, why does that not work?
Well, I mean, that's just like in sports, one way never fits all. I've always used this example. If you put the bag over the top of 10 different players, and there were 10 of the top 20 players in the world, and you just watch their strokes and their method and the way they hit the ball and the way that you reacted, there would be 10 different ways of doing it. Guess what? There would be 20 different ways of doing it. In the top 100, there's 100 different ways of doing it. So there's not a cookie-cutter way of doing this. However, there's similarities with some of the grips and some of the stroke techniques and how fluid you have to be in the chain, the kinetic chain from the feet to the hands and all this. But the bottom line on the thing is your unique style is your unique style. And you better have your unique style, because even if you get good with somebody else's style, the best you can ever be is an imposter, or somebody is an imitator. So you've got to be number one in the world at being yourself, number one. But there is more than one pathway. That in the United States, and I think people find security in just thinking, look, I've got the right way of doing it. And that's the worst thing. As a coach, even I know this. I've got 15 players on my team. There's 15 different ways that they do it. But guess what? There's 15 different ways I have to approach them. And guess what? There's 15 different ways that they learn skills. And you have to really nurture who they are and what is inside of them. And you've got to find a way, whether they are kinesthetic learners, whether they're repetitive learners, whether visual, and all of these things. Look, you're not going to get it perfect either. It's on the player to use whatever's around them. But the worst thing we could ever do is that cookie cutter thing of there's a pathway. I hate that. Look, there should be an expressway or a highway or a freeway of becoming a champion. And our organizations out there need to say, this is the goal, go get it. But to think that there's a pathway, it's just wrong. There's more than one pathway.
All right. The next thing is, the coach wants to fix problems. So they walk up to you and they start talking immediately about problems. And sometimes they create problems to fix them. Now, the one of the things that hits me as I say that is, the parents don't always know what the problems are. So they're not quite sure. And this sounds really smart from the, you know, when parents, you know, oh, this coach cares. He's come up to me and they talk about all these problems my child has.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that? Like, how come that is, why does that not work? And where does that lead the player?
Well, first of all, I've never seen a champion that didn't have flaw in his game or her game. And I mean, Federer might be the closest to being pure, just beautiful player. But I mean, players, you know, didn't like Sampras's, forehand. His running forehand was good. His cross court. People didn't like certain things about the way Agassi volleys or, you know, is. How's the net game for Nadal? Everybody's got stuff that's not great. But here's the point I wanted to make. Ned Caswell is a very, very top coach. He's up there in Tennessee. But I heard him give a talk to parents one time, and he said this. He said, look, if you got two people fighting and one person has 2 4-foot swords and then one person has a 5-foot sword and a 3-foot sword, who's going to win? Well, it's the 5-foot and the 3-foot sword's going to win. So what we normally do is we all only work on our weaknesses instead of accentuating the excellence in the person. The best thing you can do is saying, what is my son or my daughter's best chance for greatness? What is their best strength? You nurture that strength. You grow that strength. You build that strength, whether it's a forehand, a backhand, or whether it's movement or whatever it is, you make them feel great about their good becomes great, and guess what? Their bad stroke becomes adequate. And that coach, it really bothers me when coaches walk up and say, I can fix that. at backhand, and then they change the grip or they change this. And that's the stupidest thing you could do after a certain point. After 15 or 16, you don't do that. It's like changing a person's jump shot or changing a – now, there's stuff. I mean, maybe Tim Tebow should have learned a shorter back take on his throwing motion, shorter throwing motion earlier. There's some things out there like that, but it takes some very skilled eyes to see that. But I see so many young coaches walk up and say, oh, man, need to change grip on that forehand. And then it takes the kid about 3 years to get his forehand halfway decent again. And you don't do that. You've got to basically, it takes a lot of skill set, because the whole patterns of the point, the shot selection, everything has to do with this, the sequencing of things from the time the kid's 10 to 16 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so,
so in following that up, the forehands and backhands probably don't mess with that.
I don't mess with ground strokes after age 15 at all.
I
think volleys, there's so little movement with volleys, and there's technical things that have to be exact. Your volleys are almost all technique, because your 70% of the power comes from the opponent, 30% is you. Your technique has to be good there, so you've got to have a kind of a backhand grip. You've got to be able to do those. You've got to correct those things. Your serve, if you have a power leak in the serve, a lot of times you can correct it with a stance, with some simple motor mechanic. But ground strokes, don't mess with ground strokes, parents, after age 15 or 60. Don't mess with them. That's their signature. You can make a few adjustments with footwork. Like, we've got a youngster on my team, his forehand is way, you know, he gets picked on out wide on his forehand because too much Western. Well, we work on just getting his footwork squared more and working on this one shot, keeping it simple, his cross court to cross court, and his running forehand that he takes from the guy goes down line and he pulls across court. We work on the footwork a little bit to where he can handle that ball, but you don't take away from that great inside out forehand he's got.
Yeah, because the problem is that what you end up doing is you end up maybe, and it's the sword thing that you just talked about, you maybe end up helping their weakness slightly, but you take away their strength.
Completely. You make a 4-foot sword and a 3.5-foot sword. So you really...
So the next thing I had, the next thing we need to write down was the coach explains flaws, but doesn't see the unique greatness. Now, this is something I think takes a lot of years.
Yeah.
But I constantly hear these sales guys, you know, these guys out there selling, you know, this is what I can do on the court. And they'll go through every flaw. But we all know our child has a uniqueness.
You got to see the unique greatness in every youngster. Every one of them has a unique greatness. The word is unique.
Agreed. Cookie cutter technique with lots of gimmicks. How come that doesn't work?
Well, you're number one in the world of being you. But even if you copy Federer perfectly or Madison Keys perfectly as a female, you're going to be an imitation.
But YouTube is full of videos right now of these little gimmicks and stuff. I mean, and parents love that.
Look. There, it's just like a baseball swing or anything. There are similar biomechanic things that matter. You know, I mean, your racket speed matters. Keeping the ball in the contact or the racket in the contact zone matters. Footwork matters. This is the way I've gotten to the place where I teach this way. I teach lower body. I teach lower body, overlearn till it's perfect, because it's so fast now that there is almost a perfect similarity to the movement to the ball and recovery from the ball that you hit. I say that's mechanical, lower body. Upper body is kinesthetic, though. I let the guys go a lot, picking out their own style. However, years ago, we used to do it backwards. We used to make the upper body mechanical and the lower body. I mean, Yvonne Goolagong, I remember her. She used about twice as many steps as most of the other women. Chris Everett was sort of perfect the way she did things. I mean, with the difference in the rackets, yeah, you had being more mechanical gave you a long, you know, longer hitting zone, gave you a bit more consistency in those things. But now the technology has allowed lots of different styles. The upper body, I like it being kinesthetic. But more, the heart of the athlete is unique. And when you have a kinesthetic person, a person who is feels first, thinks second, you know, you've got to teach them from the inside out. Now, some people are more mechanical and look at it in a different way, but everybody's not different. And the first statement you made, Coach, was it takes years and years and years of working with hundreds of players before you really come up with a style that is going to maximize you, the unique potential of that athlete.
The last trap I had, I remember this story that Steve Smith told me years ago. He said, you know, tennis promotes our sparring partners up to coaches. And I was thinking, well, what's he? He said, look, in boxing, do you think it would ever happen in boxing that the sparring partner would be the coach? And I just kind of looked at it. I was like, well, where is he going with this? So, and I remember what we talked about, but sparring partners, you know, that's a big trap in tennis. You get these guys, they're still playing, they're playing well, and they're learning how to coach. But sometimes we promote them up into a position that they're not ready for. Why is that, Coach? Why are those guys not ready?
Are you saying that a lot of times the players that don't make it as players, they go into coaching, we promote them into coaching instead of making coaches? Or I don't think there's a simple formula for that, Coach Blumenthal. You're right. If you think about it, we really do not have a system that trains the coaches. You cannot go take any training program and be an excellent coach. I don't think there are any great young coaches. I'm sorry to say that if you're young out there. I just think it takes so many reps of successes and failures along the way. It takes the older people with the older eyes, with the very knowledgeable eyes, with the wisdom to make the right moves. I would never trust my son or my daughter with a coach that's really young for anything else except maybe some motivation and some hitting. But to make the unique moves, it takes a long time. But the sparring partner thing, yeah, we promote a lot of the shoulda, woulda, coulda been players into coaching. But I think a real coach is just a teacher who's looking for the answers, endlessly searching for the correct answers.
Absolutely. You have to have thousands and thousands of reps in that. And you don't always get the reps in you don't at all get the reps in as a player. I mean, it's a different set of reps.
Completely different.
And those reps do matter. And eventually you'll learn how to translate that into your coaching, but it doesn't happen immediately.
Well, I mean, let's go there. There's some tour coaches that are, they go out there and you got a Paul Anacone that was, you know, coaches out there on the pro tour. I think Lendl's out there coaching, but the world's most renowned coaches, were they great players themselves? Not always. I'd say less than 50%. Definitely in other sports. I mean, you look at it. Bobby Knight never played professional basketball. He was number 6 guy at Ohio State. Was Belichick a pro football player?
No, I don't believe so.
I don't think he was too. Tom Landry, I think, played. Vince Lombardi was not. He was coaching at Fordham initially, and then he got his break as an assistant with the assistant to the New York Giants. Then he went to Green Bay. But really, the coaching is a big, big full bag of many, many different skill sets. You know, so I don't know. I just think that there's a lot of great coaches out there that can't beat their players, and they should not be able to. It's just like Bobby Knight couldn't beat any of his players in basketball.
I'm going to change up a little bit. We're going to make a different list here. Now it's going to be the list of attributes that you should be looking for in a coach as you look for your coach. These are the things that you it should the light bulb should go off. You should hear him talk about these things. You go, okay, this guy could be my horse whisperer guy. The coach understands developing a player is level-based, not age-based, but the levels are divided in two equal parts, maturity and skill. Why is that important? Why is it important?
Well, you're exactly right. If you want to put in a nutshell exactly why we're so slow in developing players in the United States is we go by age-based. We have 10 and under, 12 and under, 14 and under, 16 and under, 18 and under, college. And by the time the kids get through the jumping through the hoops the third or fourth time, I mean, it's sort of redundant. Didn't I already get good? No, I guess not. Now I'm bad again. I'm in an upper age group. Oh, didn't I get good? No, I got bad again. So I get good, get bad, get good, get bad. Really, I think that's why this UTR thing is a good thing, but it should be skill-based and not age-based. One of the best ideas I've heard, the top coach there in Atlanta, really good one. He said, look, if we're going to have rankings, the UTR is a good thing now. It's a rating system, but you ought to have every junior player in the United States listed on the same ranking. The 18s to the 14s for sure. And then what you want to do is just say, hey, I'm number 256 in the United States of all players. Oh, by the way, let's pull out all the 14-year-old players. Oh, guess what? I'm number 9 as far as all the 14-year-olds. That's the way we ought to do it. Because the kids, again, it should be skill-based development, not age-based, and I just think it's just was a simple way to do it, and they didn't think through it, and they didn't understand what the heck they were doing as far as holding so many kids back as far as their skill development.
And there are places in the world where they do that.
Yeah, there are. In Asia, actually, what ITF has, 14 and under and 18 and under, I think, only. But I remember, when I worked in Thailand, you were ranked 18 and under, basically. I mean, they might have had some subdivisions there, but you, look, it should be a skill-developed sport. It's like when kids start to run and they start to learn things, you got to open it up and let them run to the head of the pack. We sort of lasso our kids and bring them back in. We don't let the cream rise. We bring them back in and stir too many times.
The next one, the coach is able to give direction to a player when there's adversity or a problem with a common understanding of the level, but answer that's unique to the child. So there's a commonality to their approach, but then they give an answer that's unique to their child. When problems occur, when they get hit, which is going to happen in tennis, correct? You're going to get hit with adversity. It's a tough sport when you dive below the forehands and backhands.
Well, we like to genericize everything, and we like to name it, claim it, blame it, I think, with problems some athletes have. We're real quick to say, oh, hey, this is happening to this person. This happens a lot. And, you know, there are similarities. But again, every athlete is unique. Every athlete needs to be trained from the inside out. I put this level of relationships down. See if this makes sense. There are five levels of relationships: cliches, facts, opinion, feelings, and needs. From the least depth to the greatest depth. cliches and facts. So everybody stays at cliches and facts. What's going on? Not much. How are you? And then facts are like, hey, he won that match 6-3, 6-4. Hey, by the way, he's got a good forehand. Now we're talking about opinions. But then the depth that you need to coach, it's just like a good teacher. You have got to, could you imagine? I think at the beginning levels of like music, art, sport, anything, you might be able to just coach the outside. But again, I think you're going to go into the depth of the different kinds of coaching, the different levels. I think you were going to say the difference between introductory coaches and to all the way to championship coaches. I think that's where we're botching it up. We'll go to opinions, but we don't, again, coach the heart. You coach the heart of the athlete, not just the skill set.
Absolutely. And we are going to talk about that as we get through the list. The next thing that I have is the coach values failures in ugly as a big part of the child's development. Now, this is one that I just don't see too many coaches out there anymore. If they do value that, they're definitely not advertising it. Now, why is that important?
Well, it's a litmus test. When you fail, what do you do next? When you fail, you either bail or you take, chicken do and make into chicken salad. You make lemons into lemonade. There's two kinds of the kids that quit or they recommit. When you fail, you quit or you recommit. But it's the halfway failing that the kids do now, coach, that is really troublesome. In other words, they'll say they're still trying, they stay in the game, but they sort of pull the plug. They don't go to the depth of the intensity or of the heart in the competition. And again, it's our own fault for treating this like a game instead more like a sport. This is a tough, this is a gladiator sport. This is a very tough sport when you play one-on-one and there's nowhere to hide and there's not a helmet on your head to where other people cannot see you, your face or the frown on your face or what's going on. It is so personal when you play tennis that the kids, the most important thing they have to learn is that when they fail, they've got to recommit. But halfway quitting or quitting all the way makes them a tweener. That makes them a cafeteria competitor. Oh, what a bad, bad deal that is. I would say there's a lot of cafeteria competitors out there with their youngsters. So, again, if the kids commit their heart enough when they're learning, when they're training, they don't give up. And they will not quit. They go back again and again and again and again until they get it right.
And can you explain a little bit about the ugly, like the ugly stuff? Like, it's a major part of process to get
really
better.
Is.
And I would say most of the commercial stuff that I've seen out there, they're so reluctant for any of that to show up. They say, oh, if the parent sees that, they're not going to want to come back.
Right.
So, if they don't go through that, that's like I used to hear, we have to get the right reps in. And it was always these younger coaches that never understood what the right reps were.
Reps are losing.
What are the right reps? I mean, how do you get to the point where it's pretty? You got to go through all this other stuff.
Here, let me say something. When I say reps at losing, a lot of people say, oh, well, I'll always play up. I was telling a parent actually today, this is how you get the right reps. When your youngster does the right thing and they lose, you put them right back out on the court to play again and try to get turn bad pain into good pain. When the youngster does the right thing and they win, you let them sit on it 3 or 4 days. For example, my team, I got a guy that got a great win this last week, and I'm feeding him more and more wins against lesser players to build off of that, and then I'll throw in the tougher opponent here very soon. But then if the person does the wrong thing and they lose, you make them sit on it. The youngster will say, hey, let me play him again. No, he's better than you. She's better than you right now. I'll make them sit on it and smolder, and I'll allow them to hurt. And then when the if the kid does the wrong thing and they are just their cafeteria competitors and they get a win and they're full of themselves, I'll get them beat that day. I'll call in the big guns and have them beat, have them smacked down right away so they don't go. So there's right reps and bad reps, but the thing is the pain, sometimes the ugly wins are the ones that propel you, and the painful losses are the ones that propel you. Losing is part of this deal. You can say you can lose, but you're never defeated. And that's the way that you have to be. And breakdowns usually happen before breakthroughs with players. Almost always when they have their most devastating loss, they usually have their best breakthrough afterwards too. But coaches have to recognize that. Parents have to understand that. You know, my son's trying out for baseball, high school team here pretty soon, and gosh, he wants to make the team, and oh man, he could get cut. And I've already said, if he gets cut, it's all for the good. Let's see what he's got under the hood, if he's really, really hungry and really desires to be excellent. If he makes it, let him do it with honor and be the hardest worker out there. But that's just tough being a parent. It's easier being a coach than it is to be a parent.
The coach doesn't use a lot of words to explain very complicated problems. Why is this important?
Huh. You know, that's a great question. That's a great question. But I use a lot of rhymes and loaded language because, first of all, if you can keep it simple, it means that a lot of other people are having the same problems. And pain engages, whether it's pain engages brain or pain goes away, the work you do stays. Don't get mad, get better. I mean, there's lots of things that coaches will say. Breakdowns happen before breakthroughs.
Well, and one thing that hit me as you were talking, we were talking a few weeks ago and we were talking about, you know, a lot of different sports shows that are out there and how players now are programmed to say certain things because they think commercially they can make more money.
You get a recording. You get a recording.
But if you go back a number of years and you listen to players talk about tennis, they literally sounded like those caveman movies, like a couple of grunts. Oh, how'd you hit topspin? Oh. You're like, it wasn't like, they don't know. I've heard the stories over and over again. Hey, we had Pete Sampras on the court, and he was talking about his forehand. He didn't even know what, you know, he couldn't explain what grip. He knows what grip. He couldn't explain what grip to, lower level play. They don't think like that. Players think almost like cavemen and cave. It's very, very simple.
I must beat this person.
Yes. Hit forehand over. Like, they're not saying, hey, I've got to put the racket at this angle and spin the ball over. If they think like that, they can never compete. They can't compete in any sport, let alone a 1v1 gladiator sport where you've got another competitor on the other side of the net. So it has to be very concise. Automatic responses on the way they're thinking each and every, you know. Time.
Well, paralysis, you don't want paralysis by analysis and for the loaded language part of that. And that's what we do. Again, I think that there's a time for mechanical learning and stuff, and you give it to the youngsters and you have them work on things. But the bottom line on the thing, the kinesthetic, the inside out is really – really what gets them up and beyond. It's the inside out.
The coach is looking at mastering your child's greatness, not forehands and backhands.
Right. Well, you're trying to give them a venue or an avenue to compete, but also to let the inside of their, without the competitive greatness, There is a part of all of us that when we're put in that position, whether it's fight or flight or whether it's just to conquer a goal or whether we're ambitious, but everybody wants to win once they're on the court. Some people more want to win more than others, and some people will do anything to win it sometimes. But the bottom line on the thing is it's tennis gives us a vehicle to go out and to release, have a total release performance. I talk about a lot to athletes. TRP, total release performance. How do you get the athlete to completely release what they're doing? Now, you have to work hard enough first so you trust all your skills when you're on the court. But then it is a reckoning with the battle that you're about to go to. Just say, look, I'm not in charge of much here other than my effort and how I'm going to compete, and this is what it looks like, whether I win or lose, and bring it on, man. We're going to be 100% of who we are right now.
Very good, very good. So though that's the list. So now you have a list of, you know, some traps that you could fall into and possibly identify the wrong coach, or maybe your player or your son or daughter has moved on and they need a different level of coach, or, you know, and then you have a list of explaining really where what the coach should be talking about when they're kind of clued into the right thing for your son or daughter. So moving forward, there's different levels that every player is at different times. And there are coaches that some of them just have an aptitude to do well in those levels, and some of them have a lot of reps in those levels or a little bit of both. And, you know, so they're very good. And ideally, and I remember talking to somebody about this other countries are doing this on a higher level maybe than we are. And there is a relationship that you have to build with players, but if you can pass your player along, boy, that can help out if you can do it at the right time. You know, there's things that get in the way maybe with that, and we can talk about that at different times. But for your eyes, as we go through this list, let's talk now about what kind of skill set we're looking for at different levels of a player's development. So the first level, when a kid first starts out, your son or daughter first start playing tennis, what should we be looking for? What type of coach? I mean, you know,
you'd say fundamentals, but there's got to be fun in the fundamentals.
Fun,
I just have,
it is fun.
Fun in the fundamentals.
Because the kid's got to fall in love,
it's
right?
It's an introductory coach, somebody that gets enthusiasm going. We have a lady where I live in Somerville, and she gets so many kids excited about playing tennis. Let's see, her name's Susie Wimberly. She's just a fantastic synapse, fantastic person to get the youngsters excited about playing. So all these kids are playing.
And we've done kind of a below average job in tennis and giving those coaches any sort of accolades. Those people are they're as genius as the ones that get them through to the top. I mean, if you find somebody that's like the Pied Piper that you know,
that excites kids about being on the court, and
that
level, and that's level one.
That is
we get a, but level two is the hard one. Level two is like, hey, I want to be good. I've been playing it. It's fun. I want to be good. Yep. Now, level two is your fundamental coach, and guess what? The adventure becomes a job. You find out, whoa, this is a hard sport. And I got to work at it. So that person is, you want your more detailed person as level two, the fundamental coach. And, you know, so that's a different person.
Fundamentals, but they're not losing the heart and the passion that got them in there. But the fundamentals are very important at that next level. As we get on to the next level, the third level of coach, It's more about what, Coach? What do you see there?
The motivator, the difference maker. It sends them to the fast track, or not the fast. That's wrong. It sends them to the where.
Get them up to racing speed.
Racing speed. That's what I was looking for. Gets them from cruising speed to racing speed. Now that person introduces them to tournaments. Starts coaching, not just teaching. There's a difference between a tennis teacher and a tennis coach. This person, the motivator slash racing speed coach is the person who is a teacher slash coach. And then, of course, the last level, I guess, would be what's your coach?
Probably setting goals and inspiring and
yeah.
really giving
the
direction. Yeah.
Pre-championship coach and then a championship coach.
And the only thing I had after that would be you have coaches that are in a certain arena. Like you told a story to me a while back on how they you were asked to be the Davis Cup captain, and then later on you got a phone call. Well, coach, you never played Davis Cup, so you can't be in that arena.
I never told that story,
yeah.
But with all humility, that's true. I did a Junior Davis Cup coach for the United States, 1980, 81, part 82, about 2.5 years. And we were doing well. I mean, the first year we won every tournament and every match we played except two the entire summer. Our guys, we got it rolling, and we just had the top players, but we had 10 top players running every morning of the summer. They were training together, working together, winning every tournament. Boy, they became a force, and six of them became top professionals, and then the next year it went pretty well. We won the U.S. Open 1 year, finals, French Open and women's, and then the next year we runner it up in the U.S. Open, and the head of my boss, he says, look, he says, I believe that you will be our first U.S. Olympic coach, he told me. And he told me that, and, you know, I'm just, whoa, that's pretty good stuff. And, you know, about 6 months or so, he said, look, I told you that, and you've done a fantastic job here, but actually don't have any professional playing experience. I said, look, I understand that. If I maxed out here with the Junior Davis Cup, if I maxed out here with college coaching, that's okay. I'm very proud of that. I'm just going to coach, grow where the good Lord planted me, and I'll be fine. That's what I told him, and I was good with that. But I've never told anybody that story, Coach, so thank you for bringing that up. It makes me feel good. But the bottom line is I maxed out. I would have loved to have been Davis Cup coach. I would have loved to have been Olympic coach. But the bottom line is I maxed out. But the thing is, I'm very, very happy to work with whatever's in front of me and whoever's in front of me.
And the thing is that maybe we have one of the few sports that does try to do that way. But there is some value in being a player in that arena.
Yeah,
but if you look at other sports,
they
don't quite do it that way.
Bobby Knight didn't play pro basketball. They didn't play pro basketball. Yeah.
You know, and there's other pro coaches out there that didn't play pro basketball, and you know, same in football.
Politically, in the United States, it's just the way it works.
It would take time to understand that arena. Like every one of these, you'd have to get certain reps in. But again, your knowledge base on how to coach would eventually be good enough to be able to excel at that level. So, but there are coaches in those arenas. So whether it's a professional coach, whether it's college coach, and you get that experience, those arenas, there's a certain skill set that it does matter. So that would be the final level of coaches. And you know, it's very difficult. There are some out there, people that have been exposed to all those levels. Now, those guys are invaluable, and those are people, parents, you want to be around, you want to talk to.
Could I jump in there a second?
Yeah.
Just there's a lot of championship pro-level coaches on tour you would not want doing fundamentals with your youngster.
Absolutely not.
Because they could not hit the heart of the youngsters at the right time. People who do that, it's like an elementary school teachers, God bless them, you know, because they, whenever they get the kids inspired to want to learn. So it works both ways, and you've got to plant.
Yep.
You got to grow where the good Lord has planted you.
And that's where it gets confusing as a coach, as a parent. And, you know, there's not a lot of people probably giving this information out freely to parents. And I think a lot of what we talked about, boy, I would take note of, because I think it's very important if you want to define a way to come up with somebody that's really going to help your child excel in the sport, these things really matter a lot. But what matters the most is the care. And if without the care, none of this really matters. So you could be deficient in some of these areas and really care for your child on a lot higher level than somebody that's just on the surface, and your child will still accelerate in that sport. But ideally, this would be the way we would go about it, correct?
Right, right. Well, here's, I guess the guide would be here. Be a parent first. Use your parent common sense and the love common sense. But, you know, and listen, I'm going to just tell you, pray about it. Ask the good Lord to help deliver that. Coach, after you told me to look for a horse whisper type person for my son's baseball, my radar, sonar, my laws of attraction, whatever it's called, my RAS was locked in. Who is the right person, not who is, it doesn't have to be the flashiest, the best. Who is the right person that will pour into my son or my daughter for them to develop an inquisitive heart and an inquisitive mind and hunger to go through all of the barriers and all the hardships and everything that you have to do to be the best that they can be within their framework and with what they want to do. The tragedy is when we try to program anybody. We are human beings. We are never meant to be programmed. These daggone computers are programming us. They figured out that daggone computers will never act like humans, so they're trying to get humans to act like computers. And you've got to give to the heart, nurture the heart, coach the heart. Find that person that will coach your son or daughter's heart. That's it. That's it. Now that's the one that'll work.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Coach, for this. I think that we have talked about a lot of great information today that's going to be very useful for parents out there as they go through this this journey, this great journey with their child and learning and figuring out how to find the greatness in each one of them. So I thank you for that. Is there any closing comments?
Coach, listen to Coach Blumenthal's Coach's Corner every week. I look forward to listening to more. Coach, thanks for having me on. I certainly appreciate it, and I know this is going to save parents a lot of time and a lot of heartache, too.
Well, thank you very much. I'll see you back next Sunday. Have a great week.
Thanks, Coach.